So these are notes from the Achilles Heel Workshop on Women, Men and the Left, held at the Beyond the Fragments Day event on Saturday, August the 30th, 1980, in Leeds.
Achilles Heel is an anti-sexist, pro-feminist writing and publishing collective which started at the Men's Centre in East London. It grew from men's consciousness-raising groups, but we, as an anti-sexist men's group, wanted to do more than simply talk about men's relationship to feminism.
So many people came to the workshop that we decided to divide into two groups. A small group went into another room, and James and myself stayed with the around 30 women and men who remained.
I've been in a men's group since 1974. Men's groups, like women's groups, have proven difficult to keep together. Until recently, men's groups have focused particularly on the private realm, on the changes we can make in our closest relationships. These changes, while important, soon run up against obstacles that the wider society imposes and barely even begin to challenge the fundamental power and ownership relationships between men and women, which are expressed most bluntly in rape and violence against women. The split between the personal and the political remains unchallenged.
I think there was a brief bit about the anti-sexist men's conferences. Something about the London one, at which men were attacked heavily by the radical gay movement for their complacency and lack of awareness in responding to gay politics. And about the last conference here in Bristol, which was supported by a large number of gay men and generated a warm and affectionate atmosphere, free from the competitive and often haranguing postures men are familiar with when we come together to talk about politics and make decisions, or not. At this point, I think the workshop became open and James took the chair.
Do you have meetings open to women? Reading Achilles Heel, I had a sense that it was very much preaching to the converted, the white middle class, left-wing male intellectual. That's already a million miles removed from the average male chauvinist porker.
So far, we have had no meetings to which women have come, though technically meetings are open to women and men.
Yeah.
Women's reasons for separatism are very clear. There's no political justification for men's separatism. It gives men power over women.
There is a dilemma around women and men working together.
But people, for personal development reasons, need separatism to find themselves. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm from the National League of Young Liberals, and we found in our group that men never discuss the issues women want to discuss. Go off and discuss it amongst yourselves, the men say. How can we progress? Yeah.
Well, many men are scared by sexual politics, and many to join up with other men. Personally, I find feminism disturbing, and I need to deal with that. How?
Listen, feminism and socialism go hand in hand. We'll get nowhere unless the demands of women about society, feminist demands, are accepted as the demands of us all. Mm-hmm. This means putting the feminist perspective into all areas of life and work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes. Why is it that non-sexist men don't oppose sexist men in groups, in the workplace, the pub, and other contexts where men come together?
Men must take responsibility for fighting sexism and male domination among other men. Mm-hmm. Only then can we consider working together. Men have to be challenged if they are to go on.
Beyond the challenge, what's after that?
I felt oppressed by the last men's conference in Bristol. Our group was constantly being asked for support. The reason for being separatist is that in mixed group, women are always being oppressed by men.
No wonder women are suspicious of us. They have good reason to be. At the anti-sexist men's conference in Bristol, almost everybody who said they were in men's groups said it was because their women were in women's groups. Nothing about subverted feeling necessary or coming from inside?
It's about men paying lip service to feminism.
Yeah. When have we seen a purely male march against male violence? You know, a purely male protest on behalf of an injured, raped or murdered woman?
Racism is respectable enough for male participation, but sexism, it seems, is women's work alone.
What about the struggle beyond, men working with women, women and men achieving their full potential?
I've always supported men learning from the women's movement by getting together in small groups. But I would also hope for the emergence of a militant anti-sexist grouping who would take actions when the women's movement asked for support, who would fight, for example, for new methods of male contraception, for maternity and paternity leave, and for creches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But men and women need to fight together. Yeah? I wonder if in our men's groups we are seriously opposing sexism, or if we're all just all boys together, having a good time because we're not around women.
That's why the reason for separatism is still here. We need to know that men are doing something that shows mixed working can be a reality.
Well, men are oppressing themselves. Heavily sexist men are usually pretty shitty in the way they treat other women, and other men as well.
It is important that people find themselves. Divide and rule will wreck us all. How can we get it together?
We have a master-slave system. We must focus on the slave.
Nonsense. Women are oppressed by men. We are all oppressed by capitalism. We must get together at times to work together to overcome this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
Basically, my criticism is that the men's movement is largely a therapeutic organisation for men. And it's important to distinguish this therapeutic role from a political one.
Sexism affects women and men differently. Mm. How do men start to challenge their own sexism? Men cannot do it alone. We need to listen to those who we oppress. Yeah. Women, lesbians, gay men.
We have to fight together. Why the fuck should I get on and raise your consciousness? That's why separatism. Once this has gone through, then maybe women and men can work together.
We need to redefine masculinity. Some women don't want to take on the job of changing men. It is something that we should do ourselves.
Women are much stronger, and that strength is here to stay and grow. We can stand up. Men organising separately are no threat to this strength.
But men's attitudes are twofold. Supporting women's strengths, challenging the macho image, and redefining images of masculinity, and also in terms of sexism, as it happens day to day.
Right, there's no parallel in the slave's master thing as slaves kill the masters. Workers kill the bosses. We are discussing changing the system into one of equality. Men must see what their role in oppression is. Men must look to themselves to see a way in which men can make a contribution and kill our masters.
I want to go on fighting the sexism in me, in my life. But, to be honest, I don't think gatherings like this are going to help me much.
Men have to do more than simply say they are willing to change. They have to prove it. Men who get involved in sexual politics still sometimes want to run the show. We realise it's up to men to get it together and not expect a pat on the back from feminists.
Despite all the perils and pitfalls of men's groups, of appearing patronising or insincere, the struggle seems, to me, to be vital.
I wish the men's movement well, and I still think it's a great idea. Even if I do think that I've trouble organising a proverbial piss-up in a brewery, never mind changing society, maybe anti-sexism is just too important to be left to anti-sexists.
And on this note, the workshop broke up as it was time for lunch, etc. So, somewhere during all this, I did reply to one man who was talking about how men excluded gay men and the influence of radical gay politics. And I talked about the necessary separatism of gay men and hopefully the coming through out of that into being able to work with other men and possibly women in mixed groupings. I talked about my experience as a gay man of working in Achilles Heel and the importance I feel of that for the collective and for myself. But I didn't write this down, and now I can't remember whereabout in the discussion it came. Somewhere near the end, I think.
You forgot to say that these notes are subjective and should not be read as literal speech, and that the artist has her field day adding and subtracting paragraphs and inserting material from its research to suit his need.
Everybody, raise your hand who believes you have the right to rape. I have thought a great deal about how a feminist, like myself, addresses an audience primarily of political men who say that they are anti-sexist. And I thought a lot about whether there should be a qualitative difference in the kind of speech I address to you. And then I found myself incapable of pretending that I really believe that qualitative difference exists. I have watched the men's movement for many years. I am close with some of the people who participate in it. I can't come here as a friend, even though I very much want to. What I would like to do scream. And in that scream, I would have the screams of the raped and the sobs of the battered. And even worse, in the center of that scream, I would have the deafening sound of women's silence, that silence into which we are born because we are women, and in which most of us die. And if there would be a plea or a question or a human address in that scream, it would be this. Why are you so slow? Why are you so slow to understand the simplest things, not the complicated things, the complicated ideological things? You understand those, the simple things, the cliches. Simply that women are human to precisely the degree and quality that you are. And also that we do not have time. We women, we don't have forever. Some of us don't have another week or another day to take time for you to discuss whatever it is that will enable you to go out onto those streets and do something. We are very close to death, all women are, and we are very close to rape, and we are very close to beating, and we are inside a system of humiliation from which there is no escape for us. We use statistics not to try to quantify the injuries, but to convince the world that those injuries even exist. Every 18 seconds, a woman is beaten. There's nothing abstract about it. It is happening right now as I am speaking. And it is happening for a simple reason. There is nothing complex and difficult about that reason. Men are doing it because of the kind of power that men have over women. That power is real, concrete, exercise from one body to another body, exercised by someone who feels he has a right to exercise it, exercised in public and exercised in private. It is the sum and substance of women's oppression. It is not done 5,000 miles away or 3,000 miles away. It is done here, and it is done now, and it is done by the people in this room, as well as by other contemporaries, our friends, our neighbours, people that we know. Women don't have to go to school to learn about power. We just have to be women, walking down the street or trying to get the housework done, after having given one's body in marriage and then having no rights over it.
The power exercised by men day to day in life is power that is institutionalised. It is protected by law, it is protected by religion, and religious practice. It is protected by universities, which are strongholds of male supremacy. It is protected by police force.
Against that power, we have silence. Everybody, raise your hand who believes you have the right to rape. Not many hands will go up. It's in life that men believe they have the right to force sex, which they don't call rape. And it is an extraordinary thing to try to understand that men really believe that they have the right to hit and to hurt. And it is an equally extraordinary thing to try to understand that men really believe that they have the right to buy a woman's body for the purpose of having sex. That is a right. And it is very amazing to try to understand that men believe that the $7 billion a year industry that provides men with cunts is something that men have a right to.
That is the way the power of men is manifest in real life. That is what the theory about male supremacy means. It means you can rape. It means you can hit. It means you can hurt. It means you can buy and sell women. It means that there is a class of people there to provide you with what you need. You stay richer than they are, so that they have to sell you sex.
Not just on the street corners, but in the workplace. That's another right that you can presume to have. Sexual access to any woman in your environment when you want. Now, the men's movement suggests that men don't want that kind of power I've just described. I've actually heard explicit whole sentences to that effect, and yet everything is a reason not to do something about changing the fact that you do have that power. Hiding behind guilt, that's my favourite. I love that one. Oh, it's horrible, yes, and I'm so sorry. You have the time to feel guilty. We don't have the time for you to feel guilty. Your guilt is a form of acquiescence in what continues to occur. Your guilt helps keep things the way they are.
But I think that if you want to look at what this system does to you, then that is where you should start looking. The sexual politics of aggression. The sexual politics of militarism. I think that men are very afraid of other men.
That is something that you sometimes try to address in your small groups, as if if you changed your attitudes towards each other, you wouldn't be afraid of each other. But as long as your sexuality has to do with aggression, and your sense of entitlement to humanity has to do with being superior to other people, And there is so much contempt and hostility in your attitudes towards women and children. How could you not be afraid of each other? I think that you rightly perceive, without being willing to face it politically, that men are very dangerous, because you are. The solution of the men's movement to make men less dangerous to each other by changing the way you touch and feel each other is not a solution. It's a recreational break. The men's movement seems to stay stuck on two points. The first is that men don't really feel very good about themselves. How could you? The second is that men come to me or to other feminists and say...
What you're saying about men isn't true. It isn't true of me. I don't feel that way. I'm opposed to all of this.
And I say, don't tell me. Tell the pornographers, tell the pimps, tell the war makers, tell the rape apologists and the rape celebrationists and the pro-rape ideologues. Tell the novelists who think that rape is wonderful. Tell Larry Flint. Tell Hugh Hefner. There's no point in telling me. I'm only a woman. There's nothing I can do about it. These men presume to speak for you. They are in the public arena saying that they represent you. If they don't, then you had better let them know. I want to talk to you about equality. What equality is and what it means. It isn't just an idea. It's not some insipid word that ends up being bullshit. It doesn't have anything at all to do with all those statements like, oh, that happens to men too. I name an abuse and I hear,
oh, that happens to men too.
That is not the equality we are struggling for. We could change our strategy and say, well, okay, we want equality. We'll stick something up the ass of a man every 3 minutes. You've never heard that from the feminist movement. Because for us, equality has real dignity and importance. It's not some dumb word that can be twisted and made to look stupid, as if it had no real meaning. As a way of practicing equality, some vague idea about giving up power is useless. Some men have vague thoughts about a future in which men are going to give up power, or an individual man is going to give up some kind of privilege that he has. That is not what equality means either. Equality is a practice. It is an action. It is a way of life. It is a social practice. It is an economic practice. It is a sexual practice. It can't exist in a vacuum. You can't have it in your home if, when the people leave the home, he is in a world of his supremacy based on the existence of his cock, and she is in a world of humiliation and degradation because she is perceived to be inferior and because her sexuality is a curse. This is not to say that the attempt to practice equality in the home doesn't matter. It matters. But it is not enough. If you love equality, if you believe in it, if it is the way you want to live, not just men and women together in a home, but men and men together in a home, and women together in a home. If equality is what you want and what you care about, then you have to fight for the institutions that will make it socially real. Equality is a discipline. It is a way of life. It is a political necessity to create equality in institutions. And another thing about equality is that it cannot coexist with rape. It cannot. and it cannot coexist with pornography, or with prostitution, or with the economic degradation of women on any level, in any way. It cannot coexist, because implicit in all those things is the inferiority of women. I want to see this men's movement make a commitment to ending rape, because that is the only meaningful commitment to equality. It is astonishing that in our worlds of feminism and anti-sexism, we never talk seriously about ending rape. Ending it. Stopping it. No more. No more rape.
The things the men's movement has wanted are things worth having. Intimacy is worth having. Tenderness is worth having. Cooperation is worth having. A real emotional life is worth having.
But you can't have them in a world with rape. Ending homophobia is worth doing, but you can't do it in a world with rape. Rape stands in the way of each and every one of those things you say you want. And by rape, you know what I mean. We're talking about any kind of coerced sex, including sex coerced by poverty. You can't have equality or tenderness or intimacy as long as there is rape. Because rape means terror. It means that part of the population lives in a state of terror and pretends to please and pacify you that it doesn't. So there is no honesty. How can there be? Can you imagine what it is like to live as a woman day in and day out with the threat of rape? Or what it is like to live with the reality? I want to see you use those legendary bodies and that legendary strength and that legendary courage and the tenderness that you say you have in behalf of women. And that means against the rapists, against the pimps, and against the pornographers. It means something more than a personal renunciation. It means a systematic, political, active, public attack. And there has been very little of that. I came here today because I don't believe that rape is inevitable or natural. If I did, I would have no reason to be here. If I did, my political practice would be different than it is. Have you ever wondered why we're not just in armed combat against you? It's not because there is a shortage of kitchen knives in this country. It is because we believe in your humanity against all the evidence. We do not want to do the work of helping you to believe in your humanity. We cannot do it anymore. We've always tried. We have been repaid with systematic exploitation and systematic abuse. You are going to have to do this yourselves from now on, and you know it. As a feminist, I carry the rape of all the women I've talked to over the last 10 years personally with me. As a woman, I carry my own rape with me. I want one day of respite, one day off, one day in which no new bodies are piled up, one day in which no new agony is added to the old. And I'm asking you to give it to me. And how could I ask you for less? It is so little. And how could you offer me less? It is so little. Even in wars, there are
aside for one day. I want a 24-hour truce in which there is no rape. And on that day of truce, that day when not one woman is raped, we will begin the real practice of equality. Because we can't begin it before that day. Before that day, it means nothing, because it is nothing. It is not real, it is not true. But on that day, it becomes real. And then, instead of rape, we will, for the first time in our lives, both men and women, begin to experience freedom. If you have a conception of freedom that includes the existence of rape, you're wrong. You cannot change what you say you want to change. For myself, I want to experience just one day of real freedom before I die. I leave you here to do that for me and for the women whom you say you love.
Thank you so much for joining us for this evening's performance. To Albert, to Juliet, to Nick and Finn, and all of our readers this evening. We're going to take a couple of minutes break now and then come back for a Q&A session. So if you'd like to join us, feel free to go to the bar, grab a drink, and then join us back here in a few minutes. So.